ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
यथा धर्माधयश्चर्थ
मुनिवर्यानुकीर्तिता
न तथा वासुदेवस्य महिमा ह्यनुवर्णिता यथा धर्माधयश्चर्थ
मुनिवर्यानुकीर्तिता
न तथा वासुदेवस्य महिमा ह्यनुवर्णिता यथा धर्माधयश्चर्थ
मुनिवर्यानुकीर्तिता
न तथा वासुदेवस्य महिमा ह्यनुवर्णिता
यथा
as much as
dharma
adaya,
dharma adaya
all four principles of religious behavior
all four principles of religious behavior
cha,
cha
and
artha,
artha
purposes
munivarya,
munivarya
by
yourself
the great sage Anukirtitaha,
repeatedly described.
Na, not. Tata,
in that way.
Vasudevasya,
of the personality of Godhead.
Sri Krishna.
Mahima,
glories.
He,
certainly.
Anuvarnita,
so constantly described. Translation. Although, great sage, you have very broadly described the four principles beginning with religious performances, you have not described the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Purport. The prompt diagnosis of Sri Narada is at once declared. The root cause of the despondency of Vyasadeva was his deliberate avoidance of glorifying the Lord in his various editions of the Puranas. He has certainly, as a matter of course, given descriptions of the glories of the Lord, Sri Krishna, but not as many as given to religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and salvation. These four items are by far inferior to engagement in the devotional service of the Lord. Sri Vyasadeva, as the authorized scholar, knew very well this difference. And still, instead of giving more importance to the better type of engagement, namely devotional service to the Lord, he had more or less improperly used his valuable time, and thus he was despondent. From this it is clearly indicated that no one can be pleased substantially without being engaged in the devotional service to the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, this fact is clearly mentioned. After liberation, which is the last item in the line of performing a religiosity, etc., one is engaged in pure devotional service. This is called the stage of self-realization, or the Brahma-Bhuta stage. After attainment of this Brahma-Bhuta stage, one is satisfied. But satisfaction is the beginning of transcendental bliss. One should progress by attaining neutrality and equality in the relative world. And passing the stage of equanimity, one is fixed in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. This is the instruction of the Personality of Godhead in the Bhagavad Gita. The conclusion is that in order to maintain the status quo of the Brahma-Bhuta stage, as also to increase the degree of transcendental realization, Narada recommended to Vyasadeva that he, Vyasadeva, should now eagerly and repeatedly describe the path of devotional service. This would cure him from gross despondency. the point being made here is that Vyasadeva has performed many, has written many things. And in this many things that he has described this Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha very elaborately, very detailed. The whole how it works, the whole metaphysics of it, the esoterics, all the subtleties, everything. It means the amount, volume of material cannot be understood. It's like an ocean. And if you take each subject, it itself is an ocean. And then you take a part of a subject, that's an ocean. So it's unlimited what he's written. But that has been written, but the glories of the Lord have not been written in this similar way. You do not find, they're hidden. All the different, the Upanishads, the Mahabharata, all the Vedic literatures, it's all hidden. Because this literature should be understood as that what is written here, the Vedic literatures, this is the essence. Right? This is like the major part. The Puranas are unlimited, the Veda is unlimited. It's all unlimited. And they're bodies of knowledge. Anything that is about a history of the Lord, the devotees, the creation, the kings, right, the Manus, the Prajapatis, that is all Purana. That's the subject matter of Purana. You describe anyone in these categories, it's Purana. Right? But, and so within this is unlimited stories. Of those unlimited stories, there are stories that are very prominent. And then those are what our Vyasadeva writes down as the 18 Puranas and the Upa Puranas. Right? The amount of knowledge that's there in Ayurveda or in Stapanaveda or this, it's unlimited. You cannot describe it. Anantadeva has been describing since time immemorial with 1,000 heads. Right? Non-stop. And he's not getting to the end of it either. So it's not possible. So what's prominent is written down. So that's what we know. It's not that it's just this, but this is what's the essential parts. So it's written. So now, in that, he can choose whatever proportion he wants. Because it's unlimited of anything. So now seeing the people in general, how they're not really that interested in God consciousness, hoping for their welfare, but at the same time desiring that they be uplifted, then he took out from the Vedic, the vast ocean of Vedic literature and compiled that into the books that we know. Or, you know, what is important, how people could actually advance, what they could actually grasp. Because otherwise it gets too esoteric, they grasp nothing. So then he did this, and then people are pleasantly going on. The life is going on, it's prosperous, their dharma, their artha, their kama, they're getting their liberation. It's all going on nicely. But that's not enough, it's useless. Because all of those four are temporary. Even liberation is temporary. Right? Unless when it's situated in the transcendental realm, that any liberation below that is temporary. So it's not worth it. Anything temporary ultimately is not worth it. If it is connected to the Lord, then it is fine. But if it's not, it has no value. So then, here, then the proportion of verses about Dharma, Artha, and Kama over exceeds the, and Moksha, excuse me, greatly exceeds that which is devoted to Bhakti. That tells how to get develop the relationship with the Supreme Lord. So because of that, then he is feeling despondent, because the real purpose is pleasing the Lord. So because the Lord is not pleased, then Vyasadeva is not satisfied. Now one may ask, well then what is the need of all these other literatures? Of course this is the Lord's pastime, this whole activity happening in this way. Because the Bhagavatam should be written, because there is only a few people. Lord Chaitanya tells Sanatana Goswami that there's only a few people that are interested in spiritual life. Of all the living, unlimited living entities, very few are human. Right? Humans are actually very, very few. Then, of those who are human, very few are civilized. Civilized meaning those who follow the Vedic literature. because most don't. Of those who follow the Vedic literatures, very few are actually interested in liberation. Right? They're just interested in Dharma, Artha, and Kama. Then, of those interested in liberation, they're interested, but they don't endeavor for it. They don't actually take the steps to get it. Right? So, of the few that do take the steps, very few are successful. Right? So then, you see is that for those who are really interested in transcendence, it's very small. Right? Like if you have, you announce that you're doing a program describing Vedanta Sutra, you'll have some people come. But if you say that you're doing, you know, some Ramayana or some Mahabharata or Bhagavat, then you see so many of the, you know, the Hindus will turn up. Huge amount. So like that. But even that is small compared to what's out there. So you see it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And then of those who will turn up for the Vedanta Sutra, only a few of them are actually interested in Krishna. So it's meant to be that way. But the point is he was finished with the Mahabharata. Mahabharata was the conclusion of all the Vedic literature. He had written everything, and to make it easily accessible to everyone, he wrote the Mahabharata. So you get what is actually the essence, what is the Vedas trying to say. So then he's done that. So that was it. He wasn't going to write more. But now Narad Muni then points out, yes, you need more. He's written the Upanishads. In that he's given the essence of Vedanta. He's written all the other Vedic, means the non-transcendental. And he's given the essence of that in the Mahabharata. And even that he connects to Vedanta through the Gita. And then he's figured, okay, done. But then Narad now points out is that because you didn't then go to the transcendental platform fully, because real transcendence is worship of the Lord. Therefore you're not satisfied. Because all this Vedic literature hasn't been properly connected to the Lord. You've showed it's where it's come from. You showed its connection in that way. You show the metaphysics how it connects back. But you haven't shown how that is actually bhakti. Like that. Because you can describe, you know, the process of God consciousness, you know, to anybody. You know, if you describe it from the metaphysical platform. And people will be satisfied. You know, that it's nice explanation. But then there's the point where you have to describe devotion and bhakti. Like that. Because otherwise anybody, you can appreciate that there's some supreme power, there's this, there's the intelligence, the mind, all these different aspects of the metaphysics, how the living entity has to be satisfied through a full engagement of those. Since, you know, everything is coming from the supreme, then naturally there's going to be how you say that aspect of the supreme is going to pervade everything. So unless you see all these branches of human nature connected with the supreme, there's not going to be satisfaction. So like this, it's all not. It's yes, you can see. So this is how all these other literatures are working. Is they're pointing out that you have to be connected to God, but they're not bringing you to the point of bhakti. They're saying knowing Him, meditating upon Him, obtaining Him. All these different things. This is the topmost. So that's there. But no one goes beyond that. That's the difficulty. They don't go beyond that. So because of that, then there's a problem. So that's easy enough, right? When we do a lot of times our different preaching and our different aspects like that, then we preach in an indirect way, which is very nice in the beginning, but at some point you have to make that bridge. You will find in the preaching you go into that, you're getting good response from the person, it's going well, and you're confident, you're moving forward, but you keep moving in that way. But at some point you have to go, okay, there's God and we're His servant. And when that comes, then it becomes nice. But that bridge sometimes we don't want to take. So that's the point that Vyasadeva's at. Is that at some point you have to bridge it. Because then it actually becomes alive, it becomes real. Before that it's the theory. But the element of rasa is not there, so actually you can't be happy. Ananda hasn't come into it. Right? The soul is sat chit ananda. So sat Chit has been described by Vyasadeva. He's inferred Ananda, but not really. Greatest happiness, you know, unlimited bliss, all these, he uses all these very nice terms. But it's not nailed it down to relationship. It's just you'll be happy. But happy why? Because you have a relationship with God. So that hasn't been described. So that aspect then is that relationship is applied. That's Ananda. That becomes Ananda. So when that happens, then the preaching is actually successful. Otherwise it's nice, we've got them interested, we've created some kind of, okay, we're okay guys, we're logical, you know, we're not crazy, we're not sentimentalists. So that's nice. But our real purpose is to get it to connection with God. Otherwise, then still it's a loss, because you could take that and apply it to anything. The Supreme, okay, Supreme what? For those who want to go to heaven, that's the Supreme. Those who are interested in impersonalism, that's the Supreme. For those who are interested in sense gratification, that's the Supreme. Right? Gita says the demons, then sex is considered the Supreme. Right? Everything culminates in that. Right? One day Prabhupada was, it might have been in Boston. It was somewhere where there were some big docks. Prabhupada was walking along with the devotees in the morning walk, and there's this huge docks, you know, all these cranes and huge ships, everything moving and everything. And then Prabhupada says, what is all this? Why all this is here? You know, and then the typical things when Prabhupada asks these questions, devotees come up with a million answers other than what it is. So then, you know, they're saying this, that, and so many different things, and economics, and this and that. Prabhupada said, no. Prabhupada just, and then when everyone didn't know what to say, Prabhupada said, it's sex. They're all thinking sex. Those ships and those cranes, what's that? How is this? He says, because the guy who owns all this, he's doing all this to get the money so that he can enjoy life and attract that woman who, on that level of sense gratification that he wants to enjoy it. Right? If he doesn't have those big yards, he doesn't have the money to attract the kind of woman he wants to enjoy with. So therefore, he has to have that. So then, you know, so that also is the Supreme. So then, that's why it has to be taken to the point where it's Krishna and our relationship with Krishna. Then that platform, Ananda, that relationship, then has meaning. Then the interaction becomes useful. Otherwise, the metaphysics are nice. The esoterics are nice. But if they don't bring it across to full to bhakti, to devotion, then it has no real meaning. So then here Prabhupada mentions that after liberation, then you have the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So here, it seems to apply that one is... that he's making a differentiation here between mukti and Brahma-Bhuta. Technically, as far as the position of the soul being freed from the material world is the same. It means you're out of the material clutches. So that's been there, but he's mentioned, etc. One is engaged in pure devotional service. So it appears that the person who's liberated has mukti and is doing devotional service, that's Brahma-Bhuta. So that seems to be a difference here. Otherwise, one would normally take it to be the same. So here he says, after attainment of this Brahma-Bhuta, one is satisfied. So this paragraph can't be contradictory to the previous one. It's saying that dharma, artha, and kama, and moksha won't give you satisfaction. So only devotional service. So here, Brahma-Bhuta means liberation, but it has to include devotional service. So that platform is what has to be preached. Then from Brahma-Bhuta, in that platform of satisfaction, if one is progressive, one comes to the level of bhakti, with devotion to the Lord. Then it becomes appreciated. Because we see otherwise there are elements that stay within the heart of the devotee, even the Brahma-Bhuta platform, that are not fully... not fully come to the best platform. I can't say purity, purification, because the soul is pure. But within purity, there's still progressiveness. Right? Shantaras is pure. So the neutrality is there. But it's not actually progressive. Right? That's the difficulty. Shantaras is not progressive. Shantaras is... One appreciates God, but one hasn't come to the point of one appreciates the point where we'll do service. That's the bridge. So here one has to get from appreciating God in this distant feature, then bringing it to the point of who He is and appreciating that. So that's the next where we actually bridge and bring in the concept of devotion and God and all that. But then again you have to bridge it that will become applied as service. But you will actually do service. That's why some of the acharyas they say there's only four rasas. They don't accept shanta as a rasa. Because rasa means interaction. Here's you just appreciate. So it's technically one way. But the other person, by being appreciated, then they may appreciate back. But it's not a dynamic interaction. You appreciate, they appreciate you, but it hasn't happened. Like you may find many times. You know, you've had somebody you've appreciated for a long time. And then sometime, somehow or another, you find out they appreciate you. Either they say or someone else says. And then that brings up the aspect of, oh, maybe you should meet them and try to interact and everything like that. Does that make some sense? So then it's a matter of crossing that into the realm of the next levels of actual relationship. So that's why shanta is not actually considered relationship. It's there. It's the basis. Means without appreciation, the other five don't function. That's sometimes where it may be. How do you say? It may be seen that relationships don't function. They break down. If you look, analyze, most likely there's a breakdown in this. Because all the rasas are built on top of this. So unless there's appreciation, then none of the higher rasas can function. You can't have friendship if you don't appreciate the person. You can't have parental or conjugal unless you appreciate the person. So much of the time what we see is that familiarity grows to the point where there's no appreciation. When that breaks down, then the rasa itself actually breaks down. So it's actually quite a simple thing to correct. A breakdown in a relationship. It's just develop again the appreciation. If that's there, it automatically comes back. Just like within the within your varnashram, is you will find difficulties in the varnas or in the ashrams if they're not founded on the bottom. Right? They all are built on the bottom. Right? Shudra is the common man. They have the qualities that everybody has. Then on top of that, you add in economic understanding, endeavor, administrative endeavor, and the scriptural endeavor. Right? So now if you don't have that mood of service, you don't have that mood of loyalty, good qualities, then your whole varna system will break down. Right? If there's not a mood of service, if there's not a mood of these things, then you won't have someone who you consider a high-grade dvija. Same in the ashrams. If there's a breakdown in the foundations that the brahmacharya ashram is on, the study of scriptures, the respective authority, the service attitude, humility, sense control, all these different things, if those aren't there, then the other three orders don't actually function. So the whole thing is the rasas are all, everything's built on what's on the bottom. They can't function on their own on the top. Otherwise it becomes too flickering. You see a fire is fixed at the bottom. That doesn't move. But the higher it moves away from there, the more it moves. The more action is there, the more light, the more heat, the more... Like, it's the hottest at the top, and it's the brightest at the top. So what is the benefit of the fire you get at the top? Therefore, you see the Brahmins, the sannyas, these different things, the conjugal rasa, these are the top. The most is happening. The most elements are there. It's the most bright, like in Uttaridhi. Conjugal rasa is called Ujjvala, means very brilliant. But if you disconnect it from the bottom, then the flickering will go out. Right? It just evaporates. Right? Sometimes you may have seen when there's a fire, and there's some smoke, because there's something in the fire, in the smoke, the flame will actually catch the smoke and make it burn. And you get a bit of a flame there. But as soon as that flame moves away from the other flame, there's no connection, it goes out. So it always has to be connected. So in the Brahma-Bhuta stage, then you have that foundation, but it has to go up to the realm of bhakti. So now we see that the gopis, that they were very attached to Krishna and liked to be with Krishna, but you see there was an element of just their own side, and they were appreciating their own fortune. So in appreciating their fortune, Krishna was left out of it. Right? Because piety and morality and these are nice when they're connected to the Lord, but when they become disconnected, they lack something. So here, their great fortune of being able to be so intimate associates of the Lord, then they're contemplating that, but they're contemplating their fortune. They're not contemplating the Lord. Does that make sense? You can see they're contemplating their fortune, connection with the Lord, but that moment when they're contemplating the fortune, it's not connected with the Lord. So that's good enough for Vaikuntha. That's good enough for Dwarka. It's even good enough for Mathura. But it's not good enough for Vrindavan. And within Vrindavan, it's not good enough for Kanchanarasa. Because that's 100% full surrender. There's not a moment where what they're not starting with Krishna and coming back. But here they started with, they saw the scene, and then Krishna themselves. So they split it. So because of that, Krishna disappeared. Because they had split it, Krishna disappeared from it. Right? It's natural. Because who's in the heart is who's manifesting in front of you. Right? Here in the material world, we leave that relationship with Krishna. So Krishna doesn't manifest in front of us. He comes within our heart. So he's with us. Right? So one sadhu was pointing out is that the Krishna, when we forget about him or do something wrong, he doesn't disappear, right? He never leaves us. Like that, he has too much affection for us. He never leaves, but he hides. So he's within the heart, but he'll hide. We can't see him. We can't find him. So he's hidden in the heart as Paramatma. But then, when one comes to the transcendental platform, enters the spiritual world, then he manifests outside. There's no more Paramatma. That's why Bhagavan goes beyond. So here, then, the gopis were meditating, so within their heart, their meditation didn't include Krishna directly. So then, Krishna disappears from outside. Right? Because it's only what their mood is, how it's manifest outside. That mood that they have in their heart is how Krishna will manifest outside. Mother Jashoda, she's always seeing Krishna in the parental rasa, so he manifests as her son. Right? The cowherd boys see him as their friend, so he manifests in that way. The gopis see him as their lover, so he manifests in that way. So because that mood wasn't in the heart, he disappeared. Right? So they're on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, but they haven't come to the point of prema. Because at prema, there will never be any separation of this. Right? So here it says, one should progress by attaining neutrality. Right? So that's the beginning. Satisfaction is the beginning of transcendental bliss. Right? So that's bhava. Bhava is the beginning, it's the seed. On that platform, one is in pure devotional service, and one is satisfied. It says one should progress by attaining neutrality and equality in the relative world. So, therefore, now you turn that back to the material world, and it doesn't matter what's there. That's the meaning of sannyas, is that you're equal poise. It doesn't matter. You have something nice to eat, you don't have something nice to eat. It doesn't matter. It's nice, good. It's not nice, what does it matter? Right? The body may or may not appreciate, tongue may or may not appreciate, but the soul doesn't care. Right? So that's different from the brahmachari restricting his senses so he can identify them and get control of them, or the grihastha who is developing that sphere so that he has very nice facility for the senses, or the Vanaprastha who's reversing that process and then closing down the facilities so he can control the senses again and take it to a higher level than the Brahmacharya. But in all of them, they're dealing with the duality of the senses. Right? The Brahmachari, this is, you know, control is good, uncontrolled is bad. Right? So, sense gratification is bad. Grihastha sense gratification is fine, engaged in Lord's service. Vanaprastha sense gratification is bad because it distracts me from my sadhana. And the sannyasi is, it doesn't matter. Because we're not, what goes on here is not worthwhile. So it's another level. So here we see is then from that, then they're also still, because they're in the material world, they're dealing with it in that way. So that's the platform. That's how one understands someone's liberated, is that they are not, it doesn't matter the situation, right? Like the Python Sadhu in the 11th canto. You know, he's fat. He's lying on the side of the road. He's fat. He's well fed. He's taken care of. He's doing well. He's doing nice. And Prahlad Maharaj is a little surprised. You're laying here doing nothing. You're fat. You say, sometimes I'm fat, sometimes I'm thin. You know, it's no big deal. Like that. People bring something, I get fat. So if nobody brings anything, I get thin. You know, so that's not the point. So that's the point. Attaining neutrality and equality in the relative world. So that means duality has to be given up. So duality is the whole inspiration for the materialist. This is good, that's bad. So they always want good, so they progress for that. Now whether you think dharma, artha, kama, or moksha are good or bad, that's how you'll make your standards. So it's a good thing. The first step is at least you've made your standards of good and bad based on the scriptures, right? That makes the difference between the actual cultured human being and the uncultured. Cultured means the scriptures are his standard for good and bad. But then taking the next step is, that's not enough. Good and bad has to be what's good and bad for God. Right? So in the beginning, it's good and bad means, okay, what's good in the scriptures, that is then made in such a way that it's good for God. Right? Does that make sense? So the beginning of that will be because we ourselves like this. I say this is good. I mean, scriptures say it's good, but I say it's good. You know, it's kind of like, I'm glad the scriptures agree. You know, it's like, we found something that, you know, okay, that's okay. And I was always worried about that, and then they hear something or read something, and then it puts to rest, oh yes, okay, then it's okay. I've always liked that, but I was never quite confident, you know. Then the next is that it's pleasing to the Lord. And so you can take these things of the material world, of the duality, and pick the good and take that and offer it to the Lord. Right? Like in the previous purport, Prabhupada says, God realization, piety, renunciation, sense control, all these things are nice things, right? Prabhupada says, here, helpful. Transcendental realization, pious activities, worshipping the deities, charity, mercifulness, nonviolence, and studying the scriptures under strict disciplinary regulations are always helpful. He didn't say this is the goal. He said they're helpful. But then we come to the point of equanimity, that those don't matter. You're tired of this, well, this is good, that's bad. Now it's just, it doesn't matter. All that matters is what is pleasing to Krishna. So now you start from Krishna, and what he likes, that you try to arrange. So now you'll look at the material world, and you'll discriminate, okay, this is what I want, but it's because Krishna wants it. Not because scriptures say this is good, bad, pious, moral, you know, nice, wonderful, prosperous, economic, sensual, give me liberation. None of those considerations. Now it's that Krishna likes this, therefore now I discriminate. So it goes into another realm of discrimination. So it's not duality, it's transcendental. Because in the spiritual world, there is difference. Right? It's not all one. Mother Yashoda is different than Nanda Baba. They're both in parental rasa. Right? Nanda Baba and Yashoda are different from the cowherd boys and cowherd girls. So all these things you have, they're all different. There is a difference. So then, coming to it where your approach to it is simply what pleases Krishna, then that, it's not duality. you're choosing what's good and bad, but based because it pleases Krishna. So sometimes that's different. Like Krishna wanted Arjuna, Yudhishthira to lie. That would please him. Here's the man who never tells a lie, right? When it comes down to the point of did the Pandavas actually finish their 13 years in exile and incognito without being found out? Because the Kauravas figured out this must be Arjuna, right? Wasn't exactly dressed like Arjuna. Had some pretty wild clothes on and a long braid and stuff. I think he took off the bangles. We had to because they get in the way of the boat. But otherwise, you know, the bangles, you know, all these things. So then, we thought that was a little strange, you know. So, but they figured the way, you know, he's got the flag of Hanuman, you know, the way he uses the bow, the way he twangs the bow. There's only one Gandiva. There's only one person that would be brave enough to come out single-handedly against the whole Kaurava army. Right? And there was only one person enough that was even angry enough to do it. You know, 14 years they've been, you know, away, and now finally they get the chance. So they figured this is Arjuna. And according to Duryodhana's calculation, it was before the time was up. Bhishma was also sure that the time was up, but they weren't sure. So there was a discussion between them. So they said the only way it can be worked out is ask Yudhishthira. So they had enough faith in him that he would not say that he was. They were found out, even if it was bad for him. He would rather go back to the forest for another 13 years than tell a lie. So his reputation was so much, even his enemies would trust what he said. Right? That's one of the qualities of Krishna. It says that he's trustworthy. I think it's one of the 64 qualities. Is that even the demons sleep peacefully at night because they know that unless they've done something to make Krishna upset, he won't come and attack them. So they sleep peacefully at night knowing, because they know only God can get him, right? The demigods can't get him. So only God can get him, but he won't get him unless they start something. They know if they start something, go attack the demigods, okay, then, you know, it's fair. But if they don't, they can sleep peacefully at night. So Rupa Goswami makes that point. So it's so there. So Krishna was taking pleasure in, okay, now let's get Yudhishthira to tell a lie. Right? So that's fun for him. So that's why it's said that some will say Yudhishthira's chariot touched the ground because he told a lie. Right? But it goes on to state, but some say it's actually because he refused to tell a lie. Because he displeased the Lord. So that's the actual reason this chariot touched down. Because truth is Krishna. What's true for Krishna, that's truth. And what's not good for Krishna, that's not. So for the non-devotees, then the scripture is truth. But because the scriptures have come from Krishna, they're only part of the truth. So if following the scripture is not pleasing to Krishna himself directly, then it actually is not the complete truth. Right? The gopis are going out at night, leaving their families, and dancing with Krishna. That's the highest truth. Right? But in the material world, that's not good. Right? Because you're dealing on the platform of just of duality. Scripture is coming from Krishna. But here is you have to take it to Krishna. When it's connected to Krishna, then everything makes sense. So it's very, 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 very important because we can see here, as Narad Muni is pointing out, you can get distracted by reading the Vedic literature. Like that. You'll see it's not an uncommon thing. Is that there's so many amazing things in the Vedic literature that one can easily get distracted by them. One can get distracted and go off on a tangent. Right? You can take it, oh, you know, well, what's the chart for today? Should I do this or that? Or these things are nice, they're helpful. But if the work has to be done for Krishna, it's not a matter of we wait for the auspicious muhurta. It's a matter that has to get done now, because it's the endeavor to please Krishna that gives perfection. The gopis went out Krishna called on the flute. They ran and tried to kind of dress themselves a little bit, but in that state, they didn't do a good job. Right? They put the cloth on the bottom, on the top, and the top one on the bottom, and put, you know, one eye mascara, they put one earring, or, you know, one bangle, or like this. They knew, okay, bangle. But then they put bangle, you know, but you don't think again, another bangle. Right? It's just, okay, they put everything on, but they've only put on it upside down and halfway. So then they went out to meet Krishna like that. And some of them, they didn't know, they were sitting and putting, and they took the upper cloth, the sari, they tied it onto their ankle. So some of them were running out with the sari dragging behind them on the ground. You know, like this. So then they went. And so Krishna saw that. It's very pleasing that their affection for him is so great that how they dressed us, it wasn't so nice. You could say, well, that's against, you know, they're supposed to dress nicely, look good, right? Right? It means wife is supposed to look nice for the husband, let alone for God. Right? So they could say, hey, these ladies are off the wall. They don't know anything about, you know, what's going on. But it's pleasing to Krishna, though it's opposite. Right? So then, but after Krishna had appreciated this, then in their going to meet Krishna, then Yogamaya changed it all. So that actually by the time they actually, you know, went for the rasa dance, they were dressed properly. So when they first came to meet Krishna, then he told them, no, you go away. But then when moving from there to where they had the rasa dance, then everything was put into nice shape. Right? A little hard to dance when somebody's got a sari dragging on the ground. Right? So then, now, in passing the stage of equanimity, one is fixed in transcendental loving service. So this is that next bridge for the living entity. Is that equanimity is not enough. That's the nature of the soul. The soul is tathasta. But there's no meaning to the tathasta until it's in the fire of the internal potency. So that's a bridge. Equanimity is what got us here. So we have to cross equanimity to get out of here. Right? Because if you're neutral towards God, then how you'll become attached to Him? Right? Means the grass in Vrindavan, so many of the cows, the trees, the birds, all these different things. Most of them are all just expansions of the internal potency. Right? It's not the normal position for a jiva. Jiva can be there. But they're all expansion of the internal potency. That is them. They are the sat potency. But the jiva is different. So they're built so they automatically have affection. That's just their nature. They've come from there. The jiva is created that he can choose whether he wants affection or not. So neutrality means you won't get God. You'll move away from God. If it's neutral, you get distracted by something else that's important that you have a taste with, you'll forget. So that's what's happened to us. That's why we're here. So now we have to cross that. Then it says, one is fixed in transcendental loving service to the Lord. This is the instruction of the Lord in Bhagavad Gita. So that is the point. He hasn't shown that bridge across. He hasn't shown that real liberation is being situated in devotional service. And in devotional service, you're crossing from neutrality into one of the four rasas. Once that's done, then you're on the other side. From there, then it's very easily when it comes to the Prema. But up until that point, then it's always that endeavor must be made. So we can see is that unless you view the Vedic literatures from the angle of the Bhagavatam, one can get distracted and will be dissatisfied. But if one sees it in connection with Bhagavatam, then anything can be used and connected to the Lord. So that is what's being hinted at here by Narada Muni. Any questions or comments? No?
So you're saying the grass, the trees, the cows, they're all expansion of the internal energy. It's not a living entity, it's used very independent to decide.
Yeah, basically.
That's called Shantarasa.
Yeah, that's what you find is most in Shantarasa. That's why Shantarasa is described as there. It's a real rasa. But it's not described as a rasa because it doesn't interact so much. It appreciates, but the interaction is very restricted. And so for the jiva, it's not really recommended. They're there. The five rasas are there. For the jiva, it's recommended before. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that in the internal potency, you have three aspects, Satchit Ananda, right? Vladini, Sandini, and Samdini. So from Vladini potency, you get, is expanded the conjugal rasa, all those who are in that mood. Then from the samvit potency, or knowledge potency, then you get the friendship, servitorship, and parenthood. And from the sandini, or the sat, then you get all the animals and trees and birds and all those persons like that. That's described in the Dasamu. Is that...
Yeah. You mentioned according to our spiritual meaning, benefits according to our Bhav. So in worshiping Shalagram Shila, one may see Shalagram in terms of Vishnu Tattva, or one may see Shalagram in terms of Krishna Tattva. Or how about a third category, see the Shalagram in terms of both fields, Vishnu Tattva and Krishna Tattva? Is that one or the other, or could it be a more flexibility there?
Okay, so then in the application of then worshipping Shaligram as Gaudiya Vaishnavas is Shaligram means technically there's no difference in any of the forms of the Lord. What's the difference is the manifestation of the mood and the reciprocation between the Lord and the devotees. As we can see by Gopal Bhattada Goswami's Shaligram, then manifest as Radha Raman. And still part of the Shaligram is still there and is back just to, you know, confirm that, you know, somebody didn't in the night come and throw out the Shaligrams and put this deity in the box. Right? So, still there. So the non-difference is there, but the point of difference is our mood of relating. It means the Lord, just like this, the gopis come by, they're looking for Krishna. They see, you know, this four-armed form of Vishnu standing there looking very attractive. And they ask him which way, you know, like that. And you know, it's like this, but Radharani comes, he can't maintain the mood. He's trying to, but then he becomes absorbed in her affection, and he switches out into Krishna. And then he thinks, oops, and then goes back. So he just keeps moving back and forth there. He can't maintain it. So, rasa is based on the principle of ashray and vishay. It means ashray, vishay is the enjoyer. That means the person that you're drawing the rasa from. So Krishna, being, you know, rasa moya, he's the ocean of rasa. Ananda mayo vasa. No, it's the raso vaisaha. That's the Upanishad. So then, he is rasa. It's not a matter of he's in a rasa. Sometimes we think, okay, Mother Yashoda's in this rasa, and the Gahara girls are in this rasa, and Krishna's in that rasa. No, Krishna is rasa. He's not in a rasa. So, the particular devotee, they're in a rasa, means they have that particular affection for Krishna in that mood. So when they stand before Krishna, they draw from him that mood. That's why it's said, Rupa Goswami makes the point, is that when Krishna is without his internal potency, he's not actually that beautiful. He's attractive, he's nice, but he's not that beautiful. But when his internal potency expands, then he becomes very beautiful. You can see that whenever you have, you know, three altars, like you can see in Vrindavan. You see Krishna and Balaram, very attractive, but you move over to Shyamasundar, a completely different mood of beauty, because his internal potency is manifest. He is attractive. He's the all-attractive one. But when that internal potency, then it draws even more. So that's the whole principle. Depending upon us, that's who we draw. So then you have... So that aspect is there. So that's one of the elements that will be used for concluding this. And the other is the medium of worship. is that for every medium, he means there's authorized mediums to show one's devotion to the Lord. And that medium then has a certain aspect or elements that are most appreciated or that are used. Right? So then archana is one of them, and of archana then shaligram is then more is particularly specific. Right? So that means then if you it means yes, yeah, so in any case the shaligram, no matter what your level of realization, the worship's always going to be through those rules and regulations that is applied to a shaligram. But now, depending upon whether you're having Vaikuntha not there or you're having another form of Krishna, depends on your realization. Just like Prabhupada said, we're worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. Means we're worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. Who's standing there on the altar is Radha and Krishna. But we're worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. Because the only reason that we have Mangalartik is that time is because we've been told that we're supposed to. The only reason we feed them is because we're supposed to. The only reason we feed them what we feed them is because we're supposed to. We dress them that, you know, it means, you know what I'm saying, is that it's because we have to do it this way, we're doing it that way. So that's rules and regulations. So that is Lakshmi Narayan. You take Radha and Krishna and worship them in rules and regulations, they become Lakshmi Narayan. Because you're coming with your offering at this time, they reciprocate that you're doing. You're offering the artik at this time in this way, with this many circles, you know, looking at the clock to get it down to the split second, you know, like that. Then they respond in that way, you know. So, that is there. But as one's affection grows, then when it comes to that spontaneous platform, then it's worship of Radha and Krishna. So therefore, depending on the realization, you can be worshipping Krishna, but through the medium of pancharatrik worship of the shaligram. So that way, both will remain. So basically, it's actually the options are 1 and 3. 2 is not really an option. Like that. 2 is an option with Govardhan, but not with shaligram. And even that's Govardhan if shaligram is there. Like that. In other words, Srila worship, you always offer 16 items. So if you only have Govardhan, then you offer the 16. But if you have shaligram, then you offer the 16 to him, and to Govardhan, you offer 5. Like that. So then like that, it works. So you're either worshipping as Vishnu and worshipping as Vishnu and seeing as Vishnu, or you're worshipping as Vishnu but you're seeing Krishna. Because the 16 items are always there. Like that. They're from Vrindavan. Just they're manifest differently. Like that. Does that make sense?
Mind the Prabhu saying Vrindavan is actually Krishna. Shalagram is Krishna himself because there's a story with Lucy baby, and then because of the story, that's the Paraki Rasa is there. That story. The Paraki Rasa is only for Krishna.
It is quite, we need more detail.
There's a story with Lucy baby that Krishna came as a form of his husband, so then Lucy baby loses the disturbance that the stop thinking about the husband, so then Krishna can kill him in another form. Because Krishna couldn't kill his husband, her husband, because she was thinking about him. So then, therefore, couldn't be killed, and he was a big demon. So then, Krishna came in the form of her husband, and then she was thinking about Krishna at that time. So then, Krishna came and killed him.
Oh, I see. And that was Parakya Ras, because they weren't married.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Shaligram marries Tulsi.
Then she cursed him that if you are so cruel like a stone, then you become a stone. Then he cursed him back that you have to be a river to bathe me every day.
Became a plant.
They become a plant. Also, I think he became a river, she became a river. Also,
it's all in the same line. Same type.
Sorry.
be the reason. Okay. Did you hear? No, he's asking, what is the reason for that Vyasadeva being an incarnation of the Lord himself? How could he make this mistake that he kind of missed the point? He had to be chastised and corrected and all that. So then, it's basically just part of the Lord's pastime, is that you have all kinds of varieties of living entities. So you have to have literatures for them to connect them to the Lord. So they're indirectly connected. So, yeah. And at the same time is, then the essence has to be there for those who are actually sincere. So then that only takes basically one literature. But to accommodate the broad variety of materialistic mentalities, that takes a huge amount of literature. Because, you know, they're into every aspect, nook and cranny of the material world. It's of great interest to them. So you have to connect everything to the Lord. That's why the Vedic literatures get into such metaphysical explanations. Because everything is then described. So that no matter what one's interest, one could get into it. There's no aspect that's not been described. Like that. So then, you know, like your atomic theory is described down to, you know, how each one comes, how each element comes. You know, from the mind, then transforming, you get ether, from ether like this, then what are the qualities of each, how they interact. Then you combine those, you get different things in the body, the mucus, the bile, the air, all these different things you get by all these things. So then so someone who has that mentality, atheistic mentality, can be fully absorbed in the scriptures and actually be pious. So their life can be still progressive, though their actual goal or mentality is completely, you know, send them to hell. You know, so like that. So that aspect is there. And then, in that, then we have the Bhagavatam. So then, we also see is no matter what one's position, still one is submissive to the Guru. So even a perfected soul, they still follow the spiritual master. Therefore, even in the spiritual realm, one will see that aspect. That Rupa Goswami would always, you know, respect Sanatana Goswami, you know, and take his advice and direction, those kind of things. So even though they're perfected souls, they always are seeing, you know, that this one is the Guru, or, you know, one's always, all the trees of Vrindavan are learning, you know, their treedom from Madhavendra Puri. Yeah, he's the perfect tree, because he's the tree that Radha Govinda sit under. So then they all perfect their tree-ness from him, or the other cowherd women, they perfect their parental affection from seeing Mother Jashoda, you know, or the cowherd boys from seeing Sudam, Sridam, Subal, Madhu Mangal, like that. The gopis from seeing Srimati Radharani, Lalita, Vishaka. You know, the maidservants seeing Rupa, Rati. So there's always that is there. And even then, Krishna himself is learning from them about devotion. Because he's Atmarama. So then he sees it, but they're dependent. He doesn't need the others. He can be satisfied himself. But to expand his happiness, he expands everybody, but he doesn't need them. They need him. Therefore, their attachment and attraction is greater. So then, it's naturally inquisitive. Well, what is that? Therefore, he comes himself as the devotee to understand it. So, he even learns from his devotees what is devotion, what is rasa. You know, even though he is rasa, he learns from them what is the depths of it and taste it. How to taste rasa. He is rasa, but to learn to taste it, he learns that from his devotees. And even the devotees learn from this. Bharatarani is impressed by that dedication of her dependence, because they're dependent upon her. So she learns devotion from them. So in this way, the system's so perfect. Those who are lower learn from those who are higher, those who are higher learn from those who are lower. So it's a very, very nice thing. So this principle of the guru and all that is always, always there. So that's why it's one of the first things that is taught when you deal with the scriptures, is that submission to authority, the respect of elders, respect of authority. If that's not there, then the whole should say, the fabric of the culture breaks down. Because it's all based on that. That just like we say with Shanta Ras, the appreciation of someone else, is that everything starts from there. You appreciate others, then you can emulate the quality. You don't appreciate, you can't get those qualities. You know, like that. So that's it. All right. That's a gift.
Thank you for making the distinction between moksha and liberation growing with the factor. And for further clarification, could you describe the personal service that is influenced both by the desire for liberation and one who's actually situated on the growing with the factor in the contrast?
The contrast would be is that Kapila Muni describes it in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, is that devotional service in the mode of goodness is mixed with the desire for liberation. In other words, it's mixed with the desire that you want to get out of the material world because it's a problem. Right? But equanimity is then seen by that aspect of sannyasa, is that you don't care if you live, you don't care if you die. If you live, you'll serve. If you die, you'll serve. It doesn't matter. You know. So that point is then beyond. So you get that in Brahmabhuta. But when it's mixed with liberation, is that there's the desire for liberation, and you're pleased with the happiness coming from that. You know. So there is slight distinction. So your source of happiness is actually in being freed from the material world, rather than your connection to devotional service. You know what I'm saying? That's why then there'll be always an anxiety about doing something that may give you anxiety. Right? But those who will take it up, even though it may give them anxiety, that's higher. Right? It means there's the lower platform is you'll do it because you like it, you won't do it because you don't like it. Then whether it gives you trouble or not. Right? If you like it, you'll go to no end of trouble. Right? It means you have, what is it, the Trojan War? What's that? Oh, a 10-year war. 10 years over one lady. One guy was willing to go to war to get the lady. The other guy was willing to keep at war to keep her. Like that. So it was, you know, no end of trouble that they were willing to go through. So, but then you come to the point where it's not worth it, the trouble. Right? You look at the material energy and sense gratification or economics or like, it's not worth the trouble. So therefore, because just from the same principle is that you want it, you're willing to take the trouble. You don't want it, you won't take the trouble. So now it's trouble you don't want, so you're not willing to do anything that creates trouble. So it's a step higher. You're more detached from material energy, but you're still attached to your own experience, that it's going to be nice how you've described it. It won't be an anxiety. Then you get to the next level is that even if it gives you anxiety, you don't care because it pleases Krishna. You know? Therefore, the surrender of the gopis, that they're, okay, they'll put, you know, Krishna wants the dust from their feet to cure his headache, you know, they'll go to hell, fine. That we'll be really happy in hell knowing that Krishna's headache went away. Like that. So that is the point. It's another thing. So if the other person is happy, their happiness is our unhappiness, then let us be unhappy. So that's another level. So it's like that's where it ends. Means all etiquette is described in the third verse of Shikshastika. And all, you know, the culmination of that surrender and that culture applied in devotional service, to that surrender is complete, is the eighth. Right? So those two applied, that's the perfection. So you'll see all aspects of the scriptures go back, have an element of those two. Right? They all have that. You know, therefore, you should be humble. The man should be tolerant, not accept, not become insulted, even though he is insulted by his family members. Right? Even unjustly, still, he can. Because that's connected back to, you know, Trinada Pichu Nichi, Natorada Pichu. He has to be humble and tolerant. So they all come out of that. So there's always some place where these things are applied. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yes,
see, these are fine points that are made so that they create inspiration. At the same time, you don't lose inspiration. The point is that liberation is where devotional service, really begins. Before that is sadhana bhakti. One is an aspiring devotee. But because the purpose is the same and the activities are the same, therefore the advanced devotees don't see any difference. It's just like a chef doesn't see any difference between his cooking and the preparation or the pot washing. You can't cook if you have a dirty pot. So therefore, cleaning the pot is cooking. But you can separate and say technically until you actually have the things in the pot on the fire, you're not cooking. Before that, it's preparation. It's preliminary. That element is there. So then, does that make sense? So technically, devotional service before Brahma Buddha is not devotional service, right? It is in pursuance of devotional service, but it's not devotional service. Does that make sense? But the pursuance of devotional service and devotional service are seen as non-different by the advanced devotees. But so that somebody won't become proud, that fact is pointed out now and again. That you have to know where you have to get to. Otherwise, the tendency is taking up devotional service, then the first stage of anartha nivritti is that you figure you're pretty big, like that. You've just done something, first time you chanted some extra rounds, and you're something special. You always see, it's always special, right? The relationship in a particular family is special. It's different than, scriptures say this, but no, my wife's different. Or, my puja's different than the others, or whatever I do is always different, special. Because we're connected, because it's going nicely, we're getting a result, immediately the ego becomes big. So to avoid that problem, then it's pointed out that actually there's more stages. So then that's where it begins. That's why anartha nivritti you can take in two levels. That which comes at the point of nishta and that which comes at the point of bhava. Right? At Brahma Bhuta. So the Brahma Bhuta is the complete form of the anartha nivritti. So now all mundane anomalies are gone. You still have spiritual anomalies. Means getting from neutrality to progressive. But there's no mundane. But on the point of nishta, then your majority are gone. Still something's there. At ruchi, it's more. Means that nishta, gross attraction is gone. At ruchi, subtle is gone. But still you're working for yourself. You chant the holy name because you have a taste. Right? The underline is under you, not under the name. You like chanting the name because you get a taste. But the reason you have a taste is because the Lord is happy with that. So then in the bhava stage, then you switch it from the happiness being yours to the happiness being Krishna's. That was that point of the gopis. It was their happiness, their fortunate. Right? And rather than Radharani is fortunate. And then they're able to have that connection. So it puts it in line. So that's that switch. So even in the Brahma Bhuta stage, you have a switch there, that middle. It's when you go from that full absorption and then it goes on to Krishna rather than ourselves. Our fortune and how nice it is. The experience of devotional service. It's just like you take something, the man's looking at it and then it happened and he's in ecstasy. He can, it worked out. And the woman is the experience of what was arranged, is ecstasy. But in both of them, it's been done for God, but the emphasis is on ourselves. You know, I was able to do it, or I was able to experience it. Right? So that's the thing. So at one point, it gradually goes to the point is because it's Krishna's happiness. Does that make sense? Question on the those in the neutrality of Ras being eternal potency, not jivas. So here the point is that the internal potency is devotee of Krishna. The Sandini potency is Krishna's devotee. So the point is anything that's expanded by the Sandini potency is a devotee of Krishna. So they're always willing to serve. But they serve in their capacity. It's just they're in the pot and they boil and heat, but there's no direct interaction. You know, the cows look like that now and again they might lick Krishna. But that's not the major thing, it's more the appreciation. Like that. That's the meaning of the rasa. Shanta means appreciation. You appreciate the point. When that appreciation gets to such a degree, then you want to do some service. But if it's only done once and then it comes back, it's not, then it still would be Shanta Rasa. Where that service is constant and never stops, then you would say it's moved on to servitorship. Right? Yeah, when that servitorship has... But in servitorship, there's always some friendship. Right? A little bit of friendship. So then, that's there. But when that aspect of that familiarity and that has developed to the point where friendship is the prominence, and then servitorship is assisting that, then it becomes friendship. You know, and in friendship, you always are looking out for your friend. But when that becomes the most prominent, then it turns into the parental. Right? And the parental is that intimacy. It means you know everything about the other person. Right? What that means, there's no, on certain levels, there's no secrets. Right? Outside the rasa, maybe, but there's no secrets. But when that intimacy goes even more deep, then it turns into consciousness. Right? So it's a natural progression. And then they all have the last one. Means in the conjugal rasa, when they help each other, the husband and wife, in times of distress, then they're applying parental rasa, either when they're emotionally or physically has a problem, then they're parental rasa. You know, they're making their plans, they're working out things and doing service together, that's friendship. It means they're always within what they're doing, their duties, they're doing their servitorship. The man is arranging facilities, the woman is taking care of those facilities, the servitorship. And there must be qualities that they appreciate of each other, otherwise the relationship won't work. As soon as that's gone, the whole thing disappears. Right? So the same, Mother Jashoda also, there'll be moments when they sit and they talk and it's very friendly and all that kind of thing. You know, and they make plans, like, what do you want to do, this, that. You know, and she's serving. Right? And she appreciates Krishna's qualities. And the cowherd boys, they're doing, you always hear, they come, they massage Krishna's feet, they fan him, they do things. You know, so it's always each the higher rasa includes what's in the lower. So it's just you increase it and deepen it, then it turns into the next. So when the prominence goes into the next, and the other one is supportive, so you have to see which is supportive. Their appreciation for Krishna is the sthayi bhava, and their serving is something that comes and goes. Understand? Means now and again, then they're fighting to get into the pot to serve Krishna. But other than that, they're basically just appreciating Krishna. So their appreciation is the prominent rasa. And their particular service is the occasion of rasa. Right? The birds and animals just sitting there appreciating Krishna's rasa. Very rare they come up and do something. Right? Sukh and Stari are sitting there and they're describing this and that. They're not so much interacting with them. They're just doing the service of describing. Sometimes they interact. Sometimes they tell them, go do this or do that. They do it. The cows give milk. It's all this. So you can't separate it. They're not like clean, clear, like that. So those things are there, but it's minimal. You know, like the friend may be taking care of someone in a distressed condition less than the parent. Right? Means this, if your friend gets sick, you'll take care. So parental ras is there. But generally you see is then you'll take him home and then their parents will take care of him. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's whatever is the main and what's supportive. Then that's how you get the ras. Otherwise, then all these other ones. Okay, question is that why rasa can only be exchanged between species? You know, the example being given a dog and the owner. The point is between species that they actually know what the other is feeling and thinking. That will be there. Because it's just like Prabhupada is explaining about the dog. The dog is sitting there. And the master is thinking, oh, such loving glances. And the dog is thinking, what a nice nose. Right? Because dogs, when they come across a dead body, the first thing they eat is the nose. They really like noses. That's why I was saying they lift the nose. So one can appreciate what's going on inside like that. So there is interaction, there can be dependency, but it's not so much, it's not fully there. The dog is taken care of. They have an identity. Dogs need an identity. Everyone needs an identity. A dog gets its identity by being someone's servant. So they have somewhat of that element. And they're always a well-wisher of who their master is. They always serve. They're a well-wisher towards the friends and relatives of the master. And they always take on the mood of the master. So that is the four principles. It means that those are the qualities of a wife. That's chastity. That's also the qualities of a shudra, you know, that serves. So that's why the dog always comes, it's always the example. You know, we don't bring up, let's say, a cricket, you know, or something. Chinese, their pet is a cricket. You know, like that. They eat the dogs and they keep the cricket. Slightly different approach, you know, like that. So, you know, so therefore men like dogs because of that, they have that mode of chastity and they're always consistent. You know, if you pick up the stick, then they'll be there and going like this. But the man, when he comes home, he doesn't exactly know what he's going to be facing, you know, what the mood's going to be. So, like that. So so that's why there's that seeming bond there. But actually, what the dog thinks, what the master thinks on that is not appreciated. Like that. So it's subtle. So that's why you can interact. I mean, it's just like you have this saying, someone has a green thumb. Means the plants appreciate the person. They feel comfortable with the person. So there's a natural, comfortable interaction. But rasa is not really there. So there's a trust there. There's a mutual dependency that's there, but rasa doesn't come. Anything else, sir? Yes, last one.
A
little louder.
Uh-huh.
No, okay. I got your point. So, if the question is if Bhagavatam is the conclusion, it's for everyone. You know, it means those who have material desires, those without material desires, and those who, you know, who are have devotion. Why do we need the other scriptures? Because the Bhagavatam shows you how to connect your life to Krishna and develop the devotion for Krishna. But if you want technicality of how to the detail and the metaphysics of the activity that you will be connecting to Krishna, that's the other scriptures. Bhagavatam doesn't have to do that, it's already explained. Right? It's just like you don't go to the university professor for learning ABC or 1, 2, 3. That you go to your you know, the first grade teacher, your nursery school, like that. So if you go to them and you go to the English professor, you know, sitting in the seat, you know, at the university and said, can you teach me ABCs? And they'll recommend you to somebody else. But you want to know what is language, how it functions, what are the various ways you can express and bring it out to get the most advantage out of it, that you go to that person. So for that, Bhagavatam is what anyone can appreciate. Anyone can find the conclusions of the scriptures there. But for detail of how you're going to perform achman or how you're going to take your bath in the morning, that you go to another scripture. But that other scripture doesn't have any real meaning unless it's connected to Bhagavatam. Okay. Does that make sense?
When the Varanasi
situation
came,
but we already explained that before. It's because you have people that are like that, then it's explained that way. But it doesn't say that he is supreme on the absolute platform. It says that he's supreme in his context. Shiva is supreme in the material world. It doesn't say in the cause of creation. It won't say that. But it'll be worded in such a way that you could make that mistake if you were not looking. Just like I say, okay, here's the, you know, this is the Sankirtan, you know, building, right? And how this building runs, there's a building in charge. That person is supreme when it comes to this building. So now, what purposes I want to fulfill are connected with this building, then that person is supreme. So people approach Shiva not to go back to Godhead. They approach Shiva for things of this world, either dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. Right? So generally we see it's kama or moksha. That's what they're asking for. So he's in charge of both. Because you identify with the material world, that's the false ego. You remove that false ego, you are liberated. You know, and if you have that false ego, then you want to enjoy. You're the controller, so you should enjoy, so therefore facility. So when it comes to that, he is the supreme. But the devotees don't approach him for that, they approach him for devotion. So then they see the bigger picture, Krishna is supreme. You know? And then if you take it within the material world, you're not interested in liberation, then Brahma is supreme. Right? Because he doesn't deal with liberation. That's outside of his field. He only knows what's inside. But Shiva lives outside the material world. He has his place in Kailash as Shambhu. But as Sadashiv, he lives in the Brahman. Right? So he's in charge of liberation. So you could come to that platform by his mercy. But it'll still be sanctioned by Vishnu. You can only get liberation by Vishnu's Krishna. But if Shiva recommends, there's a good chance you're gonna get. You know. Like that. Does that make sense? Ventura Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Shalavetha Bhaktivinoda ki, that is that old thing.